What scares us? Thought about putting a really scary picture up there on the screen. Something that would frighten you right here at the beginning. Get us all emotional. Torn up. I thought this cute little scarecrow there might encourage you a little bit more right here at the beginning. What scares us? We're living in a day of fear. I think all of us would confess that. All of us would say that folks around us seem to be afraid, but sometimes we're fearful. Now, what is fear? Fear is actually something that is healthy. There's nothing wrong with fear. Fear is the natural response to something that startles us. God has given us natural fears, and that's a healthy thing, you know, to duck when we're supposed to duck. Isn't it funny? They say, heads up, and everybody does this, you know. But fear is normal, but then there are these other kinds of fears that reach the level of what we might call irrational fears. Times where we are shaken to our core, sometimes to the point of not even being able to respond to things. We're just completely incapacitated because of that. And scientists have a definition for that kind of fear, those kinds of fears affecting maybe about 10% of the population. And those are known as phobias. And I want us to consider for a moment this idea. I went the wrong way. The idea of phobias. And let's just take a test right here at the beginning. I know you didn't come to chapel to take a test, but I want you to interact with me a little bit and help me out if you know these. These are some common phobias, and you've heard of some of them. Arachnophobia. Fear of what? Fear of spiders. Ophidiophobia. Anyone? No, close, but I mean, it would be close. Ophidiophobia is actually the fear of snakes. Now, a lot of us would be startled if we saw a snake, but there are others that are literally incapacitated when they even think about snakes. And if that's you today, I'm sorry for doing that right here at the beginning. Acrophobia. It's the fear of heights. I don't know how many of you have been out to the gorge. You know, I've not been there yet. I'd love to go out there sometime and see that. But fear of heights, and sometimes people are just literally crippled when they think of that. This is closely related. Aerophobia. This is the fear of flying. Then you've got astrophobia. This is not the fear of something hitting us out from space, you know, coming and hitting us. Astrophobia, anyone? It's the fear of thunder and lightning. Then you have, of course, claustrophobia. This is a fear of the guy with the white beard and the... No, not... This is the fear of tight, confined spaces. And then misophobia. It's the fear of germs. Now, I'm not a scientist. I don't claim to be anything like that, but I'm pretty good with search engines and Google and things like that. So I thought, what are some unusual fears that we face? And these are actual fears. And I was blown away as I studied this. I doubt any of you really know any of these, but in fact, they're hard to say. Arachibutyrophobia. Anyone here suffer from that? They want to just have your friends here pray for you. This is the fear of peanut butter getting stuck to the roof of your mouth. You probably don't have time to write that down, but if you did and you looked this up, that is a legitimate known phobia. Nomophobia, this is becoming more and more common in our day and age right now. This is fear of being separated from your mobile phone. And it's a legitimate fear that is listed. How many of you have ever worked as a camp counselor? Anybody here like that? Okay, wow, several of you here. Some of you may have even encountered a kid that was like this, that suffered from ablutophobia. This is the fear of taking a bath. This one kind of speaks for itself. Decetophobia, the fear of making decisions. Scoloniophobia, this is the fear of going to school. As we get a little bit older, this may become a little bit more of a reality here. Anuptophobia. This is the fear of being single the rest of your life. Legitimate fear that's there. Now, this next one. I'm going to try my best to say it. Hippotamontrostequiptodaliophobia. Thank you. I did practice that. Anyone want to take a guess? Fear of long words. That's exactly what it is. And ironically, this is the longest word in the dictionary. Phobophobia. I think it was Roosevelt that said, we have nothing to fear but fear itself. And it's the fear of fear. And I think sometimes we are living in a day and age of fear. I think we're surrounded by fear. And sometimes we're really irrationally affected, at least just Christians, when we consider where we stand. I want to talk to you today about Psalm 46. Take your Bibles, go with me to Psalm 46. And we want to look at this idea of no fear. Maybe you've seen the t-shirts or the energy drinks usually associated with extreme games, extreme sports. We're going to borrow from their phrase, and we're going to use this idea of no fear. In 2019, I had the tremendous privilege of visiting 43 different churches, preaching 93 times, visiting 25 states, participated in 9 conferences, 4 camps. It was a joy to visit EMU International's missionaries in Uruguay and Croatia. And as we began 2020, my schedule was just as busy. We got to the month of March. March 15th, I was actually in Tennessee. I still have a bulletin here. And this was with a group from the ABC Corral. I still have that with me. And we were at Oak Ridge Baptist Church that particular day. Some of you that were on that trip may have recalled I was there with a Croatian missionary, national missionary. We had been up in Indiana with Brother David Smith in a mission conference. He was here just recently in chapel. We'd been there at Oak Ridge here. And that morning we met, heard a great challenge from the Word of God, had a great time from the music program, had lunch with the group. And that was the day you all received the call that ABC was going to be going virtual the rest of the year. And things changed drastically after that. And what we thought at one time was just a, you know, localized kind of virus that was being all hyped up became what was called a global pandemic. And at the time, I had to get Cornell back to Greenville. We actually got him back 2 weeks early so he could fly back to Croatia and get just ahead of the airports being closed as everything was being locked down at that time. Now, I normally read a psalm a day, and one of the psalms that really struck me was Psalm 46. And if you know anything about this, this psalm has been called Luther's psalm. Speaking of the great reformer, Martin Luther said that in the times of the most furious opposition, he was heard to say to his friend Melanchthon, he would say, Philip, he'd say, come, let us sing the 46th psalm and let the devil do his worst. Well, the year was 1527. It was 10 years after the beginning of the Reformation. He'd been right at the forefront of this, and he was in his pulpit preaching when he was overcome with dizziness. Of course, this concerned him, and 2 months later, he was eating dinner with friends when he had this acute buzzing in his ear. I mean, it was such that it was affecting him that he thought maybe he was reaching the end of his life. Now, he did regain his strength, but he was overcome with discouragement. And at the same time, he was struggling with some intestinal complications. He had some heart troubles. And it was during this ordeal, he wrote these words, and I quote, I spent more than a week in death and hell. My entire body was in pain, and I still tremble. Completely abandoned by Christ, I labored under the vacillations and storms of desperation and blasphemy against God. Here's somebody that we would say was a pretty good Christian that was facing some despondent moments in his own life. This was at the time of the dreaded Black Plague, which had made its way into Wittenberg, Germany. And it resulted in many people leaving in fear for their lives. But Luther and his wife Katie felt it was their duty to remain in town to care for the sick and the dying. She was pregnant with their second child, but they took their house and they turned it into a hospital. At the same time of this, their one-year-old son Hans became deathly sick. And it was with all of this death surrounding him, he was forced to take refuge in God. And he said Psalm 46 became more and more real to him. And he took pen to paper and he began to compose Einfachburg ist Ostergott. I'm not German either. But today we sing Friedrich Hedges' translation known as the familiar hymn, A Mighty Fortress is Our God. We just sang that one together. Puts it in a little bit of perspective when you realize that in the middle of a global pandemic then, that song actually grew. Psalm 46 is actually one of the songs of Zion. It's a psalm that is celebrating the protection and the power of God. I don't have enough time to do justice to this psalm. I'm hoping to plant some seed that will allow you to go back to your dorm room or your home sometime and meditate on these thoughts, meditate on these verses. Psalm 46, 47, and 48 are a series of psalms that all deal with the theme of triumph. Notice at the very beginning, it is addressed to the chief musician, literally for the music director. It's a song. It was written for the music director. It is not a psalm of David. It is actually probably written 200 or 300 years later. This is for the sons of Korah, and it says a song upon Alamoth. We're not exactly sure what this means. Probably this was meant for the higher register, possibly sopranos and of that sort. It's believed to be written around the 7th century B.C. And if you want a detailed account of what possibly was going on at this time, if not exactly what was happening here in this context, it may have been something very, very similar what was taking place in 2 Kings 18 and 18 through 20, where we read the story of Sennacherib and King Hezekiah. Many scholars think that this is possibly the scene where Sennacherib, the Assyrian king, had come down to conquer Jerusalem. Remember, Hezekiah was a good king. Sennacherib's plan was to take 200,000 troops down to Jerusalem, conquer the city, and naturally King Hezekiah and all Israel are very stressed, more than just a little bit troubled at the news here. And it's against this backdrop that it was probably written. Three stanzas. Two refrains, verse 7 and 11, are the exact same thing. Let's look at this together. Stanza 1. God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Therefore will not we fear, though the earth be removed, and though the mountains be carried into the midst of the sea, though the waters thereof roar and be troubled, though the mountains shake with the swelling thereof, Selah. We all know that means to pause, a musical term as like in a speech where you have the dramatic pause. This is the musical equivalent of that. It's encouraging the reader to reflect on what was just said. I encourage you to go back and just read these verses and pause and meditate. Stanza 2, there is a river, the streams whereof shall make glad the city of God, the holy place of the tabernacles of the Most High. God is in the midst of her. She shall not be moved. God shall help her. And that right early. The heathen raged, the kingdoms were moved, he uttered his voice, and the earth melted. Now the refrain, the Lord of hosts is with us. Let me say that again. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge. Selah. Meditate on that. Think on that. Stanza 3. Come behold the works of the Lord, what desolations he hath wrought. Or he hath made in the earth. He maketh wars to cease unto the end of the earth. He breaketh the bow and cutteth the spear in sunder. He burneth the chariot in the fire. Be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the heathen or among the nations. I will be exalted in the earth. And then the refrain, the Lord of hosts is with us, the God of Jacob is our refuge, Selah. This morning we're looking at this idea of no fear. I want us to notice 3 points from each one of these stanzas. We'll get our main points. Number one, we need not fear because we can be confident of God's protection. God is our refuge. Notice the word there. He is our refuge. This psalm begins with the declaration of God. This is not the word Yahweh. This is not talking about Jehovah God. This is the word Elohim, what is defined in Hebrew as an intensive or majestic plural. And this often speaks of His omnipotence. In other words, He is extraordinarily almighty. And folks, notice He is. He is always this. There's never a moment when He is not. God is our refuge and strength. a very present help in trouble. This was kind of interesting as I was looking at today in history. 160 years ago today, the first shots were fired of the Civil War, or the war between the states, or as my dad liked to call it, the War of Northern Aggression. It was in my home state over Fort Sumter, a fort that stood throughout the entire war that lasted there, one of the toughest times in our country. You think we're in tough times now? We've been in tough times as a country. 34 hours later, 3,000 shells had been fired on that particular day. The fort withstood actually 11 different bombardments, over 43,000 rounds throughout the entire war, and in the end, the fort provided protection for those within its walls. That's actually the word, what it is describing here, an impenetrable fortress like an unconquerable castle. Psalm 61:3, consider what this says, "For thou hast been a shelter for me and a strong tower from the enemy." Psalm 91, verse 2, "I will say of the Lord, He is my refuge and my fortress, my God, in Him will I trust." An impenetrable castle. That's our God. That's His character. He is our strength. And this is describing His might. Listen to the way Psalm 18:2, it kind of elaborates on this a little bit more. It says, "The Lord is my rock and my fortress, my deliverer, my God, my strength in whom I will trust, my buckler and the horn of my salvation and my high tower." Now there's several things I see in there. I see something very personal as He's saying He's my, you know, as in He's my strength, He is my rock, He is my fortress. But this whole psalm is focused not on me, it's focused on Him. Then it says He very has present help in trouble. Not only is He all-powerful and He's all-present. You know, some of us, think about this for just a second. Some of us have this view of God as if He's this old bearded guy on the other side of the universe. And He's asleep sometimes. We have to holler real hard and real loud to awaken Him. You know, He's kind of disengaged. But He loves good praise music. That's our God. And that really is not our God. That's a terrible perspective. What good would an all-powerful God be if He was absent? He's not absent. He's present. He's here. Even now. The all-powerful God is close. Now, the Hebrew word for trouble means in a tight space, restricted. We might even say quarantined. 2 Corinthians 4:8, Paul tells the Corinthian believers we're troubled on every side. Psalm 138, verse 7, David admitted, "I walk in the midst of trouble." One of his comforters said, "Man is born into trouble as the sparks fly upward." And if we don't think we have enough trouble, I think Spurgeon has kind of captured it when he says there's a trouble factory inside every one of us. And if we do not get enough from without, we tend to manufacture our own. What's the normal response to trouble? I think of there are three of these. One is distraction. We try to distract ourselves sometimes. We purposefully try to ignore the situation. And some folks like this begin to turn to food. You know, it's like, give me another bag of those Doritos. Or maybe it's turning to alcohol, hit me again with another stiff drink. Some will veg out on Netflix or video games or even just go take a nap. Or endless scrolling through social media or even pornography. There's this escape. We're going to distract ourselves somehow. Others, it's denial. We try to tell ourselves that things aren't really all that bad. And, you know, everyone's just overreacting. And then others, this attitude of self-dependence, which is, I can handle this and I'll trust in my abilities, my talents, my bank account, my preparation. But folks, we need to remind ourselves that there is help available. It's exceedingly available from the Almighty, exceedingly powerful and ever-present God who is our impenetrable fortress. And isn't it wonderful that he begins the next verse this way? Therefore, on the basis of everything we just heard, therefore will we not fear. That's it, folks. No fear. You see it? You say, well, what about if natural disasters hit and things like that? Though the earth be removed. This is obviously a poetic description of your world being turned upside down. Though the mountains be carried into the midst of the sea. I don't even know how the poet could have imagined this kind of scene. In our day and age, with bombs and things like that, we can imagine something like this happening. But when we think about all these kind of disasters, though the waters thereof roar and be troubled, though the mountains shake with the swelling thereof, Selah. We all know the power of water. I remember back in 2004 watching the news and learning about the earthquake of 9.1 that occurred underneath the Indonesian island of Sumatra off the coast there, and then the great tidal waves, the tsunami that began to come, resulting in 225,000 deaths. And then he talks about the earth and mountains shake. Remember, it was March 15th that I was with you guys and some of you in Tennessee. 3 days later, my son and daughter, who are out in Utah right now for the purpose of church planting, they awoke to their room shaking and things falling off of the wall as Utah was experiencing the biggest earthquake that they'd had since 1992. And then it was 4 days later that our missionary Cornell, that was with us in Tennessee together, he and his wife awakened to their room shaking and things falling up, and they were experiencing a 6.4 degree magnitude earthquake, the strongest in 140 years. You know, when your world starts turning upside down, when the ground beneath you literally is shaking, you begin to get a little terrified there. We can understand that. But what does the Bible say? When these kind of things happen, we will not fear. Why? Because of who God is. Notice stanza 2. We need not fear because we can be confident in God's presence. I've mentioned that He is near. He's going to describe how He is near. And He begins here by saying, there is a river. Some of you probably want to break out in song now, I know. There is a river. Yeah, you get it. Rivers are pictures of refreshment and relaxation, and they're necessary for life. They're pictures of God's favor. Psalm 36:8, thou shalt make them drink of the river of thy pleasure. Zechariah 14:8, and it shall be in that day that living waters shall go out from Jerusalem. Revelation 22:1, and he showed me a river of water of life, crystal as clear as crystal, proceeding out of the throne and of the Lamb. The Bible tells this story. Think about it. It begins with a river. It ends with a river. Interestingly, Jerusalem is one of the few cities that's not built on a natural river. I encourage you to go back and study the story of Sennacherib. Go back and study this and study Hezekiah's tunnel. Because this is how God was going to save His people, with water that's not natural, but it's flowing into the pool of Siloam that is there. And you can tour even that today as you think about this. He says, there's a river, the streams whereof shall make glad the city of God, the holy place of the tabernacles of the Most High. What does He say? God is in the midst of her. She shall not be moved. God is present. God is there. God is going to be there. Notice the chapters, if you want to take these notes down, this is where you can read about Sennacherib and the story that took place and how the angel of the Lord came down. 185,000 people were slain just because God did it. They could do nothing. They had to just completely trust in God. And then he says here, the heathen raged, the kingdoms were moved, and he uttered his voice and the earth melted. That's a picture of where we live today. What does he say? The Lord of hosts is with us. We don't need to fear. The God of Jacob is our refuge. Notice he didn't say it was the God of Israel. Remember, Jacob had his name changed to Israel. I find this very interesting sometime. I think what this is conveying to us, that the God that is the God of even people like Jacob is with us. Notice the third stanza. We need not fear because we can be confident in God's providence. He says, come behold the works of the Lord, what desolations He hath wrought. God is in control. One writer put it this way, He's in charge of what happens, when it happens, how it happens, why it happens, even what happens after it happens. And this is true of all events in every place from the beginning of time. And He does this for good, for our good and for His glory. Notice what he does. He makes wars to cease unto the end of the earth. He breaketh the bow and cutteth the spear in asunder. He burneth the chariot of fire. All these military instruments of war. And then we read that great verse, be still and know that I'm God. Now, folks, we've seen that on posters. We've seen it maybe cross-stitched or knitted on a pillow somewhere. And it's so pretty and it's so nice and that beautiful, serene scene that is there. But notice the context. You know, in musical terms, we often have an annotation that has a little P that says quietly and softly. A lot of times we think of this verse and we think, oh, be still and know that I'm God. But this isn't P. This is not even F, which is forte. It's not double F, fortissimo. This is fortissimo. He's saying, be still. That's what God's saying. Be still. And know that I'm God. It's in the midst of all of this that's going on around it. God is saying, quit striving and let me be God. And somebody that's sending me all this stuff on the internet, telling me how I need to get in all these political struggles and tell me how I need to confront all of this stuff out here, they need to hear this and just quit and let God be God. And notice there are even missional implications. I will be exalted among the heathen, literally among the nations. I will be exalted in the earth. In other words, stop striving. I'm at work. I'm doing something. I'm in charge. This is His providence. The body they may kill, His truth abideth still. His kingdom is forever. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge. No fear. Let me go back just a second. Stories told about a man long ago who sought for the perfect picture of peace, not finding one that satisfied. He announced a contest to produce this masterpiece, and the challenge stirred a lot of artists, and they came out of the woodworks for this. Many people entered paintings into this contest, and it came down to two, and as the first one was unveiled, it was a beautiful meadow scene, beautiful little river, sheep grazing quietly, you know, like a little song you might hear, grazing over here on the side, and just a beautiful sunset evening. He thought, surely this is a picture of peace. And then they pulled off the second painting, and the second painting was a roaring waterfall. It was cloudy skies. There's this precipice that is right there where everything's just falling over, the thunder and lightning up exploding up above, wind and rain, and you can see that and you say, well, could this be the winner? But then when you looked closely, right there in a little cleft of the rock, what you found right there was a little bird with his nest, with the water and the storm raging all above him. And he's as quiet as can be with his little, with her little eggs underneath her right there. And she's manifesting what we would call peace in the midst of the storm. Folks, I want to submit to you this idea of peace and what peace really looks like. Peace is not the absence of a storm, but it's rest in the middle of the storms. We've already heard we're going to be in trouble, so peace is in the middle of trouble, and most of us could use that kind of peace right now. But we need not fear because of God's protection, because of God's presence, and because of God's providence. Again, not enough time to tear this apart. I wish we could. But these are thoughts you can take back with you and meditate on these.